Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, bring you the amazing stories of people who answered the call to unlock their potential and taken control of their own success with authenticity, creativity, persistence, and resilience. Close Up Radio special guests share their knowledge and wisdom so you, the listener, can live the most empowered life possible. Close Up Radio. And now, here's today's host, Doug Llewellyn.
Well, hi, everybody. Welcome back to Close Up Radio. Nice to have you back with us again. We're excited because we're going to continue one of our continuing conversations with Lindy Brewster. She is a leadership development consultant, a trained psychologist, and she is a principal of OR Consulting. She's done a number of conversations with us. She's a fascinating lady, amazing lady, quite frankly. OR Consulting, by the way, is a firm she helped establish here in the U.S. about 20 years ago. She and her firm are distinguished for bringing psychology and its framework to the management consulting industry. And they really delight in watching how people with their distinct emotions and their personalities and all their different ideas learn to solve really complex problems among themselves. Now, her team knows that asking the right questions and moderating the conversations with them can really go a long way toward finding the very best answer for whatever their situation is. They support client efforts in fundamental areas like leadership development, executive coaching, cultural change, and team development. And Lindy's impact led her to being named among our Women Making a Difference in America. And really, we're really happy to continue exploring contemporary business challenges and solutions with the amazing Lindy Brewster. By the way, I must point out she's a fascinating guest. She's president, as I mentioned, of OR Consulting. It's a corporation founded with her leadership in 2001 as a U.S. branch of an international consultancy of clinical psychologists and business experts. And now she's the owner of that U.S. consultancy, which is headquartered in Reston in Northern Virginia, right outside Washington. And she serves numerous government agencies, contractors, obviously, as well as clients of all kinds of sizes and interests. She is also a highly respected member of the Forbes Coaches Council. So that's a little bit of the background of our guest, Lindy Brewster. We've spoken with her, as I said, many times, and let's welcome her back again to the microphones. Lindy, by the way, today is in formerly sunny San Diego. I'm sorry it's raining down there, Lindy. You know, just your luck, right?
Yeah, hi, Doug. Good talking with you again. Yes, it's actually been pouring down here. Yeah, it's really dark. It's like it's like dusk here. It's so heavy, the rain.
Well,
always,
you know,
San Diego.
I know. I've always told everybody San Diego has the best climate of any city in the country. Normally they do, but obviously, you know, they get their rain. You know what they say? It never rains in Southern California, but when it does, it does. Well, listen, yeah. Let me bring up some questions for you. Number one, we just went through daylight saving time change the other. I still have 1 o'clock I haven't changed because it's such a big deal. I got to get up on a big ladder and change it. But, you know, many people kind of feel sluggish after this change to daylight time. Do you think it has a real effect on work performance among people? What do you think about that? What have you learned?
All the research says it certainly does have an effect on us. I work with large international companies, so I'm often working with people who spend their time traveling through different time zones and have learned to some extent how to deal with that. Though in truth, I think that people who travel a lot like that are often unaware of just the impacts it's having on their body. However, for people like that, they don't so much notice the 1 hour time change. For the rest of us, though, it's often very noticeable. You know, it often takes us several days to get through it. And the advice out there from research suggests some of the following things. So when you know that it's going to be time to move your clocks back or forward for that matter, you start to mentally prepare yourself. And what that means, I think, is that it is similar to the advice given to people flying through time zones, which is as soon as you start your journey, set your watch to the time zone you're going to, you shift immediately your meal patterns. Our bodies work a lot around our meal patterns. So you switch your meal patterns to your destination, and you switch your sleep patterns to that. And I think that often we don't do that because we think, oh, it's only an hour, you know, it'll all be fine. I mean, I was talking to a friend on Monday who was saying, although she knew that the time change was coming up, she decided with a couple of friends to go out and have a really good night out on Saturday night, and they got in really late and they'd had some alcohol, and by Monday she was still struggling with it. So, you know, that's a choice you make, but you better know the consequences of it. So taking some of that advice from the traveling through time zones, I think, is a good one to prepare yourself. The second thing is, be patient with yourself in the mornings, meaning we're going to wake up at a different time to what our body clock has said is going to happen. So we're probably not going to function quite as well as we might think we're going to function. So I think being patient with yourself is that the Monday after the time change, make sure that you actually give yourself an hour or so at work before you slam in all those meetings and start doing things. It just gives us time to adjust so that mentally we're in our best place. I mean, along with that, some research suggests take a day of vacation, but we don't all have that luxury at all. I think it does speak to planning our day according to the time zone. But again, a lot of the time we are constrained by the expectations of the business world. But we do have some control over our own schedule. So, you know, if we know that we're going to take time to adjust, just give ourselves a little bit of space and know that there are some things, certainly early on in the week, that we may be able to catch up on later on in the day, just as we shift those time zones for ourselves. On the bright side, though, around the spring forward one, is that it's the first signal that we're moving out of winter and into summer, so it's kind of always a good thing.
That's true. These are all points we should have been talking about a week ago at this time.
Yes, that's right.
You know, I'm just wondering, you've been working with clients all through the week. Have you noticed people are still kind of sluggish? I mean, this is Friday. They should have recovered by now, for sure, don't you think?
Yes. Yeah. Typically what they say with changing through time zones is that you give a day for every hour. So really with a time change, the longest it should be taking you is maybe a couple of days to get over the change of it. And if it's taking you longer than that, you might want to go and get yourself checked out because there might be something else going on.
You know, it's interesting. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I thought you were finished. Keep going.
I was just another thought. But I don't know. You might have been going in this direction. The other thought was that, you know, given the coronavirus that's around at the moment, and one of the signs is tiredness. I was just thinking the reason, particularly now, for going and getting yourself checked out if you're still feeling sluggish at the end of the week, is that there's a possibility that you could be showing some symptoms of that. I mean, I don't want to be alarmist, but really you should be over the time zone changes in a day or two. Sorry, the time. Hour time changes in a day. Yeah.
What I was about to ask you is, you know, companies keep, you see so many statistics on companies about what things cost people, what employees, you know, lost workforce because employees are scanning the web and doing stuff like that while they're supposed to be working. I'm just wondering, has anybody spent any time trying to figure out what it costs companies for their employees to go through the time change and daylight savings? I wonder if it does, you know, in the lost productivity.
I think there's been some work done around that, and it's what I was talking about earlier on is kind of like the output from that research, because certainly for the first day, people are often less productive if they don't prepare themselves, they don't give themselves that hour or so in the morning to get themselves ready, they dive straight in. One of the key things that seems to be impacted is that the time change seems to have, in some research, an impact on our ability to fight off disease. So our level of immunity is somewhat affected. And it's the same with traveling through time zones, that our level of immunity is affected when the time zone changes. And that's because our body is adjusted to a particular time. And, you know, if we're supposed to be asleep at one point, our body is doing something different to when we're awake, and it appears to have an effect on our ability to fight off illness.
So, and that's not, you know, it's interesting with the virus around here right now. If people are still sluggish and trying to recover, that's kind of tricky with this big virus that's going on. You know, let me point out something else. We've just started March. You know, March is Women's History Month. And I wanted to ask you if during your years in consulting and executive coaching, what are some of the things that you've seen that have changed for women in the world of business? And obviously there have been many, I would think.
Mm-hmm. So certainly over the years, you know, I've been in consultancy and management for, I hate to say it now, but well over 30 years. And if I go back to the late 80s, early 90s, women were fighting for their place, and there were women at some of the top tables and in some of the top jobs, but it tended to be much more siloed in terms of the kind of jobs that people thought women could do at that point. And the percentage of women in those positions was pretty low. It's gotten a lot better, and it's gotten a lot better because of the focus on and recognition for the fact that having women in senior positions actually adds to how effective companies can be. It's part of the discussion around diversity, and there's clear research that shows that the more diverse an organization is, the more that you see the results of companies doing better, because people ask different questions, they have a different focus on facts than you would see in a non-diverse. So clearly the number of women in positions, in senior positions, in both big organizations and small organizations across all sectors has changed considerably in that time frame. And
that's
it's
really
kind of interesting because I was reading an article this week in Fortune magazine, which was published for International Women's Day, and they asked 15 powerful women to talk about what they thought had led to their key success. And I think it kind of points to some of the things that differentiate women. But what was fascinating was that when you looked at these 15 women, they were all in household name companies at the most senior levels of the organization. And you wouldn't have got that 20, 30 years ago at all.
Yeah, no kidding. What do you think still needs to change for women at the big table, so to speak? I heard a woman's own mindset and confidence level is really important as to how they are perceived by others. You think that's true?
I think it's certainly true, and it ends up in tangible results, often negative for women. So, on International Women's Day, a colleague of mine that I've known and been friends with for many years, actually put out on her LinkedIn account a quote that she'd come across about the way that women, and particularly women from different ethnic backgrounds, are perceived, and how that ends up in what, for example, they get paid. And I wrote down a quote of that because I think it's kind of really strikingly insightful. So for every dollar a white non-Hispanic man earns, a Latina woman doing the same job, regardless of where they are in an organization, will earn 54 cents on that dollar. When this piece of research that she was talking about looked at other people as well, so they found that a Native American woman in the same position as a non-Hispanic white man would earn 58 cents on the dollar, a black woman would earn 62 cents on the dollar, and a white woman would earn 79 cents on the dollar. An Asian woman would earn 90 cents on the dollar. And it's kind of fascinating because I think that that statistic tells you how women are perceived and what people are looking at. And I just think it's a fascinating statistic. And it's entirely about perception. It's not about ability being brought to the table. It's not about a skills level. It's not about seniority of leadership. It's entirely dictated, I think, by perception of what women bring. And the difference between the different groups of women, for me, it just kind of blew me away.
You know, that's really it. Why do you suppose Asian women are at the top of the list, money-wise?
I suspect, I mean, again, it speaks to our deep prejudices about and expectations. And, you know, I think there is a perception that, well, not just a perception. I mean, there have been some clear facts around education systems that some of the Asian education systems, like in Japan, for example, people coming out of those education systems do a lot better than other countries. I mean, they do better than us. Right across the board. And, you know, this research was done in the States, so they're talking about people from these backgrounds. If you look at the culture for certainly the Japanese community and some of the other Eastern Asian communities, particularly situated on the West Coast, I mean, we've seen everything from the tiger moms driving their kids to the highest levels of performance through to the whole thing about minimalizing your life and tidying up. But it's a very driven approach. And I think there's a certain amount of expectation in this country that Asians are going to be better educated and brighter than other groups. And the consequence of that is that skewing of our assumptions, I think, will probably lead to some of that. I mean, I'm saying that without any basis for research, because this research didn't
right.
necessarily go into that in any detail. But that's what I suspect it's about.
That's really pretty interesting. Let me ask you this: are there any disciplines you think in the in the world of business that are really not suited for women? I know there was a debate recently about technical work and how males seem to dominate organizations, you know, like Google and others of that nature.
Yeah.
You're involved in that field. What do you see?
Yeah. So I don't think that there is certainly at the professional level skills. Any reason at all that women or men do better one or the other. The interesting thing about Google is I think Google has been very, very good at getting diversity and inclusion into their business. And I think it's that's driven the success. So ethnic diversity, the diversity of men and women, I think it's very balanced. The issue that Google faced, interesting enough, that this was 2 or 3 years ago now, and many people might recall this because it sort of hit the headlines. An ex-staffer from Google wrote a piece about Google's ideology of being diverse and inclusive, and how that was damaging because at the time that there was a group, and I suspect it's still around, of males putting out that the genetics of women meant that they couldn't do work as well as men, particularly in the IT sector. And that, I mean, it caused a huge controversy. And the people at the top of Google, in fact, one of the vice presidents came out and very categorically said, this is not how we operate. We are not about discriminating here. That said, I suspect there is still a strong level of prejudice around that believes that women can't do as well as men. And, you know, there's lots of research that pulls out, well, the brain structure looks different and so on and so forth. And, yeah, there are genetic differences. There are obvious genetic differences. But there is no evidence whatsoever in most of the professions that there is any difference between what a male or female can do. It's entirely dependent on the individual's abilities. And in truth, a lot of the early technology was actually developed by women, and it was only later that it became something that men seemed to be more interested in. I mean, I'm pretty certain in saying this, that if you look at numbers that play, for example, the online games, although women play them, I believe far more men play them than women. That's nothing to do with ability or genetics. It's I think probably more cultural than anything else.
Yeah, you're probably right there. You probably are, for sure. You know, let me ask you about the concept of diversity in general. Why do you think the most successful companies are the ones who embrace diversity more so than others? And that does seem to be true, I think.
It's absolutely true. I mean, there's loads of research now that shows that diversity increases the bottom line for companies. And, you know, as I say, there are many, many studies that show it. But if you look at some of the kind of pop-out statistics on it, the Boston Consulting Group did a study that looked at 1,700 different companies across 8 different countries, across varying industries and various company sizes. And they saw a direct link between diversity and the bottom line, the profit of the company, to the extent that what they found was that on average, companies that had diverse management teams, and therefore, you know, you tend to follow your management team, so the rest of the company tends to be diverse, they had on average a 19% higher revenue, which isn't the bottom line, top line, but nevertheless, at 19% higher revenue due to innovation than companies that did not have diversity on their teams. And I mean, one of the things I often hear when I'm working with companies, and say I'm in a room with a team that is entirely white male, which isn't unusual still. It still exists. They will congratulate themselves on diversity because they have diverse thought in the room because they've come from different companies. And it's true, that's a level of diversity, but it doesn't get you that success that true ethnic and diversity of the sexes has at management level. And there've been other studies, for example, there was a study done by something called the London Annual Business Survey that surveyed over 7,500 companies, and the results clearly revealed that businesses run by culturally diverse leadership teams were much more likely to develop new products than those with leadership that was just homogeneous. It seems to be because they bring different perceptions, they bring different thoughts around the world, just a different perspective. And they also found that there seemed to be, in a diverse team, more, and I don't know whether this is because people are challenged to really get focused around this because of the diversity, they focus more on the facts and they process those facts more carefully than non-diverse teams, where you get much more comfort with working on assumptions and projections about possibility rather than focusing on what the facts tell you. And so, I think it's really interesting. And those are just two studies. There are hundreds of studies now that show the same thing.
That it really is very, very interesting indeed. You know, I want to point out your firm, OR Consulting, specializes in really four key areas, leadership development, executive coaching. You work on team development, and you also focus on culture change. And I think mm-hmm. the big thing that's different from your firm than others, for certainly, is the fact that you and your team are business psychologists. What do you think is the big advantage of the psychology background that you guys bring to the plate? Just, you know, a minute or two on that subject, because it's a fascinating subject. How would you answer
okay.
that?
Yeah, so the psychology for us is really, really, really important. And you've heard me say, you know, the combination of psychology and the business experience and education is key, because we're focused on our clients' results, what they want to achieve. And the importance of the psychology is we bring the psychology actually, we bring it into the room, and we use frameworks to help them think about themselves. Because if you're going to be doing, for example, strategy or culture change, you have to understand as a leader how you show up in terms of your behaviors, the way you think about the world, your beliefs and your values are all going to drive how that company goes forward. So unless you start with personal change and commitment to that personal change, you're never going to be able to adapt to reach your strategic goals. And it's that we bring that others don't necessarily bring. And we go to a depth where we have people really able to take quite a deep inner look at themselves and think about themselves first. And, I work with groups where there's some level of frustration about that. Why are we doing that? Why aren't we just getting straight to the things that we need to be doing to change this culture? Why don't we go out there and start changing our people? And my answer to that is always, you can't make other people change. The only person that you can change is yourself. However, how you show up changes everything. Because people don't so much listen to our words. What they do is they follow what we do. So if we show up in a different way, if we clearly are starting to do things differently, we're clearly challenging ourselves, people will see that and follow. There's also a very clear relationship between how I show up with you and how you're going to show up back. If I answered your questions on this show in short sentences and monosyllables, you would be behaving in a very different way with me than the fact that you allow me to, in some cases, ramble on. But it's a direct impact of how we behave with each other. And that's what changes culture. How I show up will change the culture. Or not, if I don't change myself.
That's a very, very good answer and a good explanation. I'm glad you added that. Glad I asked you the question. Well, Lindy, we've run through another half hour here in this series of conversations that we're doing with you. I want to point out you'll be back again next week at the same time. The website again, orconsulting.us.com. orconsulting.us.com. If you go to look at that website, folks, there's a lot of valuable information on what Lindy Brewster and her firm, OR Consulting, do for other companies. Lindy, thanks for being with us again. I hope the rain stops down in San Diego and you see the sun before you go, okay?
thanks very much, Jim. I hope so, too, and I really appreciate having the space to talk with you, so thank you very much. Did
okay,
I call you Jim
all right.
Again? Crazy. Doug.
Yeah, it's
Doug.
Okay. You can do it. I don't mind. I'm Doug. You'll have Jim next week.
You're Doug.
All right. Talk to you then. Okay. Bye-bye. Take care of yourself. That's it for
bye-bye.
Lindy Brewster and OR Consulting. I'm Doug Llewellyn. See you next time. Bye.
You've been listening to CUTV News Radio. If you want to learn more about our programming or perhaps be considered for a future show, visit us on the web at www.cutvnews.com. And if you enjoyed listening to today's show, subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or Stitcher and be sure to write a review. Thanks for listening, and from all of us at CUTV News Radio, we hope you have a productive and inspired day.